You're listening to a podcast on the Black Fur Network.
Episode 56, Daphne Abdellah. In May 1997, in Central Park, New York City, the body of 44-year-old Michael McMurrow was found in a lake near Strawberry Fields. He'd been brutally stabbed, gutted, and his hands partially severed. Given McMurrow's height and build, detectives theorised there was more than one perpetrator. What they did not expect was for the evidence to lead them to two 15-year-old kids from wealthy backgrounds and how McMurrow had come into contact with them. And now we'll discuss crimes like these. Hello and welcome to Crimes Like These with me, SJ.
Me, Paul.
And me, Sam.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, we all sound very jolly.
We do.
Is it because it's still light at 8 o'clock?
And not only is it light, but the sun's out. It's been hot today.
It has been very hot here as well.
Yeah. 22 down here today.
Pardon?
22 down here today.
Oh, yeah. It was 24 yesterday here. Oh, and I was like, oh, man, I've already had enough, mate. I shouldn't say that. I know. Sam's like, burn me.
Bring it on.
Yeah. Nah, it's not for me. It's not for me. Okay. It's episode 56. It's Paul's choice. Yep. And it's Daphne Abdellah or the Babyface Butcher.
Yeah.
Kick us off.
Right, I'll dive straight in. So on Friday the 23rd of May 1997, police received a call about a missing person from 115 Central Park West, which is like a big, well-to-do sort of apartment building called the Majestic. Upon arrival, police are met with the father of Daphne Abdellah, who's worried because his daughter hasn't come home and he hasn't heard from her. She's 15. As they're talking, concierge.
Yeah, it's the concierge.
Yeah,
isn't it?
comes over and says, like, she's not missing. She's actually in the utility room over there. So the cop goes over into the utility room and finds Daphne Abdellah with her boyfriend, Christopher Velasquez, in the bath washing off.
Hmm.
So initially he thinks, right, couple of teenagers. She's clearly not missing.
In all's a utility good. Cupboard, yeah. Yeah.
So he lets her go with her father, who's obviously relieved and whatnot, and leaves. On his way back to wherever he's going, I don't know, station, wherever, receives a call through from dispatch to say someone had called reporting a body in Central Park. The call came from the Majestic and happened to be Daphne Abdellah. Mm-hmm. So he goes back. Interviews Daphne. She says, you know, things which we'll get to because I don't want to get to
spoilers.
Yeah. In the meantime, the police go to Central Park and they find a body floating in the water face down next to like a gazebo thing in the lake. The body is badly damaged.
Oh, it's in a terrible state.
Yeah,
oh,
so it's been
it's bad.
Gutted. So I've got a list here. So the body had been gutted and its intestines were floating in the water. His face had been smashed in, was almost unrecognisable. He had lots of stab wounds and lacerations and his hand was basically just hanging off just on a bit of thingy. Did you see the video of them pulling the body out?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I was surprised that they showed it. But then, had this before. Like with America, they'll show a bit more, won't they?
Yeah, like the amount of news coverage and the fact that they just kind of like heaved his body out of the water and just left it on the bank.
A little bit
disrespectful. While they investigate. Oh, and obviously there's helicopters, you know, filming it and taking photos. Horrific. Absolutely horrific. And this is what, late 90s, is it?
1997.
Yeah, 97, yeah.
The year of Nirvana for me.
Nice.
Yeah. So 8 a.m. Detective Mooney, awesome guy.
We love Rob Mooney.
Yeah, yeah. Detective Rob Mooney arrives at the crime scene. Everyone at the crime scene was basically, when he showed up, were like, well, we know who's in charge of the crime scene because this guy is huge.
He's like 6'5". Yeah, yeah. Six like a five. Brick shit on.
But he looks like everyone's grandfather. Like he's does. Just got this, like he just looks like such a nice guy.
And he is, isn't he? He's very he's like lovely. Personable, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like,
but very straight to the point. Like he, you can tell he's a no nonsense kind of guy. He's just you know, a New Yorker who's seen some horrible shit.
Yeah.
He takes control of the crime scene anyway. And directs people to where they need to go. The victim didn't have a wallet, but there were some papers around with the name Michael McMorrow on them. Michael was a 44-year-old real estate agent who lived with his mother in Manhattan. He was himself over 6 feet tall and around 200 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big guy. He was a
big fella. So the police were already thinking, how big does the guy have to be that did this?
To take him down.
To this fella, yeah, like he's a big, big dude. So around, well, later that day, Detective Rick Furman?
Yeah.
Officer Furman.
Yeah.
He goes back to talk to Daphne about the phone call she made in reference to finding the body. When he gets there, he's talking to her and she says, immediately, there's no, like, hesitation, there's no moral problem with saying this. She immediately says, oh, Chris, my boyfriend, Chris, stabbed this guy tonight and killed him.
Yeah, which that was even against her dad's advice as well, wasn't it? Because her dad basically said, don't say anything until you've got...
Well, her dad was very powerful. He was a millionaire businessman. Her mother was a French model.
Yeah.
And they were her adoptive parents.
Adoptive parents, they were well off, like millionaires.
That's it. But she just decided to not take that voice. She is just like, shit's given.
Yeah, she had a great upbringing. I think her parents died when she was a baby and that's how she came to be adopted. But like, she's had such a privileged life and she just kind of threw it away, didn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Well, she didn't have any respect for anything.
She had zero respect. Yeah, absolutely.
She was described as belligerent.
Yeah.
And unruly.
She
was, I mean, she was expelled.
Yeah, she got kicked out of the prestigious school. Was it
school? Yeah, the private
Columbia school or something.
I said Columbia,
Columbia, yeah.
Yeah, she was booted out of there.
Mm-mm. Not good.
No. So she basically just rats it out. She says they'd gone there to the park for a walk and a skate. They were both really into rollerblading. That's how Daphne and Chris met, through rollerblading. Neither of them had any friends because she was belligerent and an arsehole and he was very introverted and spent a lot of time by himself roller skating, and that's how they met. So, yeah, she rats him out immediately, says, oh, yeah, it was Chris. He did everything. He'd gone crazy and he killed him. She says Chris thought the guy was trying to kill her, but then later that story changed because they'd gone skinny dipping.
Yeah.
And she was cold when they came out of the water and he tried to put his arm around her. This is their story. He tried to put his arm around her. And Chris, quote, lost it and started attacking the guy.
Yeah, she said he just snapped, didn't he? And she just and he just went for him. Yeah.
So because you might be thinking at this point, why was a 44-year-old man hanging out with two 15-year-olds in a park drinking?
Yeah.
Which anyone would think. But as it turns out, Michael did have a problem with alcohol.
Mm.
He spent a lot of time in the park with the same group of people, they not including Daphne and Chris. They were not part of the group. They were just drinking their beers, you know, have a laugh and whatnot. Mm. But he'd actually met Daphne in a rehab center.
Mm. Yeah.
That's how he knew her. I mean, 15 and in a rehab center.
Yep.
Concerning.
Yeah. And when you say 15, when you look at pictures of this girl, she looks more like 12.
She looks so young.
So does Chris, though. They both look so young. I mean, they're basically the same age as me. They were born the same year as me, 82.
Yeah.
So that's just insane to think that, you know, they were 15 years old in Central Park, you know, in the middle of the night, drinking. yeah. with a man twice their age, twice their age.
I saw one of the women on that documentary, you know, the lady in the grey suit who's got a really annoying smile on her face, no yeah. matter what she says, the entire fucking
thing. You mean the medical examiner?
I did like her, though.
Her, she was in a grey suit and she had kind of a grey, sort of a weird bob.
Yeah, she's the medical examiner.
Yeah, she had like
and she had a great name. Did you clock her name?
No.
What was it?
She's a medical examiner, pathologist, and her name's Barbara Butcher.
Amazing. Oh, nice.
Incredible.
I really liked her.
And me, I really liked her as well. I really liked her.
Yeah, I didn't dislike her. I just found the smile a bit disconcerting, especially when she talks about people being gutted with a grin on her face. Like, she was well happy.
I don't think...
She loves her job.
I think that's what it is, yeah. Yeah, she was great. I really liked her. Yeah. Really liked her. Yeah.
So during the course of the conversation with the police officer, Daphne admits that once Chris had killed Michael, she suggested they gut the body so it would sink.
I know. She was he's fat or something. He'll definitely sink.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fatty. That's what
that's it. Yeah, really not a nice girl.
No.
It's probably not the thing that most people would suggest when they've just witnessed a horrible crime.
No.
I'd have run, personally.
Neither was the fact that when the police guy came to speak to her about it, she was eating macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
Like, the actual...
Yeah.
Well, she stated everything just with a matter-of-fact way. Like, she wasn't emotional. She wasn't... Yeah,
very cold.
It's a real shame there's no videoed interviews with her, because I think that would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's probably down to her age. And obviously, we're talking about 1997, so, you know, it might not have been normal practice for them to video.
Yeah, different rules at different times.
Yeah, exactly.
So acting on the information that Daphne had given them, the police went and found Christopher and arrested him at his apartment, where they found he was injured. He had cuts on the side of his face and his hand was cut up, his right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he'd sustained quite a few injuries, hadn't he? His hand was like really bandaged up, wasn't it? When he was in the court, yeah.
I mean, that's what happens when you stab someone with a knife without a hilt on it, though, right?
Oh, well, yeah, quite. And obviously the blood, it's going to slip because it's a smooth surface, the knife. And I mean, he's probably injured himself that way as well, to be honest, because his blood was there as well.
Yeah, his and Michael's on the knife.
Yeah.
So Detective Mooney, being the smart cookie that he was, took one look at my Chris and realised there's absolutely no way on God's green earth he could have carried out this attack on a 6-foot-plus man, 200-pound man, by himself.
Mm.
It would just not have been...
It was tiny, wasn't it?
He was tiny, yeah.
He was so tiny.
Little glasses.
Yeah. He just looked like the nerdy kid at school, though, didn't he?
Yeah. So
wasn't he part of a gang though?
No.
Really? Yes. I found quite a lot of conflicting evidence in this.
Oh.
So like he was really quiet and introverted, but then he got initiated into, and they say, I use the word gang very lightly. It wasn't like a massively serious gang, but like he had a massive like chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, he might have maybe done that for protection, because I know all the kids at the school he went to, which was a private school, like his family were also not bad off.
Yeah.
They would all call him Herb, which apparently is slang for like weakling.
Yeah.
I know.
A Herb, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the first time I'd heard that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. Me too.
Yeah.
Same, yeah.
So Mooney obviously suspected Daphne had a fair bit of involvement other than, you know, trying to explain how to get rid of a corpse. So they went to arrest Daphne at 12:30 p.m. on the 23rd. So this is all the morning after. Basically, they just immediately got
them, didn't they? Yeah.
Both kids lawyered up immediately. Daphne's being a particularly high-flying lawyer who'd later represented Harvey Weinstein. Michael Jackson, and several other big names.
He also represented some of the mob and the mafia, didn't
yes,
he?
Yes, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's yeah. good money, but don't fuck that up.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, so they lawyered up immediately. Obviously, that then bars the police from being able to question them, like, openly. Mm. Also, they were 15, so they had to have, like, people there. Oh, yeah, Chris, by the way, was an altar boy growing up.
Literally
an altar boy at the church, which he lived next door to. He was a Boy Scout. So, Michael McMorrow, also known as Irish by his friends and family, which is like a nickname, was a fun-loving real estate agent who was always laughing, always having a good time. Everyone loved him. Like, he never said a bad word to anyone.
No.
Never made a nuisance of himself. That's why he went to the park to drink away from crowds and whatnot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, on this particular night, they were in the park drinking, and along come Daphne and Chris, who had been rollerblading in the park all evening. Daphne had been belligerent and obnoxious all day, starting fights with grown men in the park. She literally said at one point, "I'm going to kill someone tonight." They ran into this group of men drinking in the park. A police officer came and broke up the group, basically, like scattered it. You almost go, obviously, can't drink here. I'm sure we've all experienced that. You know, I misspent youth.
No, I was a good girl, Paul. What are you talking about?
Well, your house is burning right now. Yeah, so the police dispersed the crowd. They all ran off in different directions. Unfortunately, Daphne and Chris grabbed the beer, and Michael followed them because they'd taken the beer.
Yeah, that's the only reason that he followed him, wasn't it? Because he wanted the beer.
Unfortunately, an alcoholic. It was at that point they decided to go skinny dipping, were cold, and then the story, as they describe it, happened. So during the investigation, they took Daphne's clothes that she was wearing that night, and they found Michael's blood on her hoodie, her watch, and her rollerblades. Hmm. There's absolutely no getting away from the fact now that she was a part of this. But she was still lying. Yeah. So when they searched Daphne's room later that day, they found Michael's wallet with ID and some money in it, in her drawer in her house, along with a few other things. I think they found... like a kosh thing.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Do you think she took the wallet so that they would be harder to identify him? Because she didn't need...
I think she was just a thief, honestly.
You think? It was,
maybe.
She didn't need the money.
That's what I was thinking.
You see that a lot, though, don't you? With, like, you know, people from privileged backgrounds who have got, you know, money to burn, they end up stealing things like from shops, like shoplifting and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know what I mean? Just for like the thrill of it, kind of thing.
Yeah, thrill kill, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what I think it was, honestly.
Yeah.
Personally. Yeah. So Michael's autopsy showed that there was a pattern of bruising on the back of one of his legs, which was a sequence of four bruises, like equal distance apart. Mooney found that quite interesting. I assume he realised what it was almost immediately.
I think he did, didn't he?
But he kept it to himself. They also found basically over 100 injuries all told on his body. I assume that includes the gutting as well as one.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so. Because he was the stab wounds to the face was over 30 or something like that. Yep. That's why and his face
also
was
in
like
his chest.
Almost, yeah, in his chest as well. Yeah.
Blunt force trauma to his head. A multitude of bruising.
Yeah, because they said that the medical examiner said, didn't she, that most of the wounds were inflicted when he was stationary. So he would have been lying on the ground.
Yeah.
With the attacker on top of him, and he didn't move, basically. Yeah.
And they couldn't figure out how he'd got down there.
Yeah.
Because he was such a big man.
Because he was such a big guy,
Chris was very small. So when the trial started, obviously they were arrested at this point because there was so much fucking evidence. When the trial started, the case for Chris was much stronger because they'd found his knife with both his and Michael's blood on it.
Yeah.
They still couldn't quite pin Daphne to the crime.
Yeah, they couldn't get anything, could they?
So they knew she was involved. They knew, like, she had a big involvement in it, but they just couldn't prove it. Like, she was just coming off as a witness.
Yeah.
Although they had arrested her. Things changed dramatically when Daphne's lawyer made the biggest mistake of his entire life.
This really made me laugh.
Because he looks so cocky too, didn't he?
And yeah, and he's obviously, you know, a prestigious lawyer.
Yeah. It's always great when the lawyer fucks up when they're representing the bad guy.
Big, you know, oh, yeah, for sure, yeah, because he's like, doesn't he call Mooney and say, oh, my client wants to talk to you, kind of like almost like so off the record?
It's called A Queen for a Day.
A Queen for a Day, that's it, yeah. I love that.
Basically, a witness or suspect can go into the police and they can tell them anything they need to tell them as long as they don't have to testify. Mm. So if they do testify and they say something different on the stand, they can then use what they said in the interview, in the Queen for a Day interview. So in the first one, the lawyer, whose name I didn't write down for some bloody reason.
Who's Daphne's lawyer?
Daphne's, yeah.
Daphne's lawyer was, let me check, 1 second. Benjamin Brathman.
That's right, Benjamin Brathman. So he turned up with her on this interview. She basically told him the same thing, reiterated, with a few more bits of information. Okay, so yeah, so she basically just reiterated the same thing, what she said in all her other like things, but Mooney knew she was lying. So he asked the lawyer if he could have another Queen for the Day interview with her. The lawyer was ecstatic because he thought he'd nailed it by this point and that she was just being charged or just there as a witness. So he was like more than happy. He was like, yeah, of course. Only he was so confident, instead of going with her himself, he sent like a junior associate.
Mm-hmm.
And Mooney was well happy. He was like, yes. Because in the interview, Mooney pulled out a photograph of the back of Michael's leg with the four bruises. And he asked Daphne what she thought it was. She hesitated at first to answer, but the junior associate lawyer said, no, it's okay to answer.
Yes.
Anyway, she doesn't, because she doesn't know. And then Mooney produces her rollerblade from the desk and lays it on the desk next to the picture.
It's like something out of a TV show, though, isn't it? Yeah. You can just imagine, like, you know, questioning the suspect, do you know what this is? No, I ain't got a clue, mate. And then they pull out the rollerblade and they're like, shit.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yeah.
So your four perfectly spaced apart bruises were, in fact, from the wheel of her rollerblade.
Yeah.
Foolishly, at this point, the associate realised what was happening and ended the interview immediately, but it was already too late. It was done.
Yeah, she kicked off a little bit, didn't she, in that one?
Yeah, that's where she started getting...
She started, like, sort of ranting almost, didn't she? So kind of... I think she was almost trying to, like, defend herself, saying, you know, like... Because at first, you know, her story was that she was a bystander, she was a witness, and she watched Chris do all of this.
Yeah.
But obviously that proved that, you know, and she's like, yeah, I kicked him, but
yeah,
I did it because of this. Absolutely. Yeah.
So her excuse was that she kicked Michael because she was afraid that he was going to kill Chris.
Yeah.
Even at this point, Chris stabbed him several times.
In the face.
In the face.
In the face.
So she was the one that dropped him, basically, by kicking him in the back of the leg with a rollerblade. Now, I've never had that happen, but I assume that would be very painful.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think she did, like, this is going to sound stupid, but I think she did it wrong. Because if you notice the pattern, they're up vertical. Like, if she turned her foot horizontal and gone down, I feel like that would have hurt way more.
I'm just wondering, like, what kind of position she was standing in. Were they back to back? And she's like,
well, she must have gotten behind him.
And she's like swung her leg back, and that's how she's done it.
Well, I imagine because
kicked yeah. back, yeah.
So it either hurt so much. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, like a donkey kick.
Yeah, like a donkey kick. Yeah.
So it either hurt so much that he fell to the floor, or she had grabbed him and then stamped his
and
back
then
and pulled him.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe she did both. Maybe she did kick him in the leg and sort of like, it's not going to take much to, you know, because if you're kicked in the back of your knees, your whole weight goes, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's entire grappling techniques based around that.
Exactly. So I'm wondering if that's how she got him on the floor. And also, he's had a lot to drink at this point.
Yeah.
His alcohol, blood alcohol level was quite high, wasn't it? He wasn't
Not to mention he's just been stabbed in the face.
And he's just been stabbed in the face, exactly. But like, yeah, I mean, kicking the back of the knees kind of thing, yeah, I think it's not going to take much to actually get him on the floor at that point.
No.
And
then she said, oh, Christopher continued to attack him while he was on the floor. That's why there's so many, like, stab wounds and stuff. But that was it. She'd sealed her fate, and they arrested her and charged her as a suspect rather than the witness that she originally was being kind of treated as.
Hi, it's Mike from the After Horror Podcast, telling you to listen to the After Horror Podcast. It's four idiots who occasionally talk about the film that we're supposed to be, you know, like, doing and stuff. Like, give it a listen. Or don't, like, I'm not your dad, but, you know, I think you'd enjoy it.
So the trial wasn't long. Well, hers wasn't.
It didn't. The trial didn't happen until something like over a year later.
Yeah,
it
was a year later. It was 1998, but it lasted a couple of weeks. It wasn't a long
trial. Yeah, it wasn't
trial.
Very long, was it?
No. So this is another little, a cool little story about Mooney. So Detective Mooney's like a massive Grateful Dead fan. And he always wears a Grateful Dead pin on his lapel of his jacket. It's the, you know, the skull with the lightning bolt for
it.
And he wears it all the time. And the DA saw him going into court and said, like,
I can't remember the DA's name. Robert,
no, I can't either.
No, Richard, something like Planker?
Something like that.
He was great. And it was one of his first cases, wasn't it?
It was his first case.
Yeah,
assistant district attorney. Yeah.
Because it was his first dealings with Mooney as well.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
First time. Yeah. And he said to Mooney, basically, you have to take that pin off because you can't testify in a murder trial with a Grateful Dead skull pin on your lapel. So Mooney said to him, this is going to go to one of two ways. I can either testify with the pin or I cannot testify with the pin. Either way, the pin's staying there. And the DA was just like, well, okay then.
Yeah, he knew he weren't going to win. He knew he weren't going to win.
They instantly became great friends and have been very good friends ever since.
That's nice, that is. I like that.
Really cool. Yeah. So during the trial, I mean, nothing spectacular happens, I didn't find, did you?
No, not really.
No.
She didn't testify.
No, neither did he.
And neither did he. So it was kind of just the defence and the prosecution just arguing back and forth kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing was that the actual, what they were trying to, because she agreed to a plea deal, didn't she?
Yeah.
For, was it murder two, second degree murder?
Originally,
but the jury only took, I think it was a few hours or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they came back with manslaughter, didn't they?
They came back with...
Because it was the same charge as Christopher.
Yeah, they both got the same charge.
Yeah.
So they were both charged with manslaughter in the first degree.
In the first degree, yeah.
Yeah, which translates to they meant to deliver great bodily harm, but didn't intend to kill.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which I don't think is true.
And I think, and I agree with the second degree murder charge, because that is intent to kill, but not premeditated.
Yeah.
And I that's what I think it should have been, because they would have got longer.
Yeah,
longer.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to the sentencing.
So that's 1998. Daphne pleads guilty to manslaughter in the first degree. She was found guilty, obviously, and sentenced to 3 to 9 years.
It's rubbish.
And that wouldn't have even been in prison because she was 16 by the time she was sentenced.
Yes, she was, so. Yeah. She would have been treated as an adult.
Yep. Chris, in November 1998, Chris's trial started much the same, very quick.
Yeah.
He was also sentenced to the same 3 to 9 years.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting.
It's far too lenient.
Even for, and I understand that if you know, people kill someone at 15 or 14 or whatever, they shouldn't be held responsible for that for the rest of their lives because you're not the same person in your teens that you will be later on. I'm certainly not the same person I was as a teen.
No, I'm not either. Whilst I do agree with that, there should be, you know, prison is prison. You know, it's not a holiday. It's not rehab. It's not anything, you know, unless they're having it is punishment, absolutely, but just because they're going in at 15 and coming out, you know, 10 years later or whatever, it doesn't mean to say that they're going to be a completely different person, i.e. now have morals and not want to have those, you know, murderous tendencies, shall we say.
Well, almost certainly if they send them to prison, they're not going to come out that way, because prison isn't about rehabilitation, it's about punishment.
Exactly.
Whereas if you look at prison systems like the Swedish prison system, for example, now that is exclusively directed towards rehabilitation. Yeah. And their like reoffender statistics are low.
It's so low, aren't they?
They're so low. Like it's something ridiculous. Like 80% of prisoners do reform and never commit crime again. That's, or never get caught.
It's just insane. Oh, yeah, or never get caught. Yeah, that's
But the prisons are amazing. Like they're like they live in dorms and they cook their own food. They've got their own kitchens and like it's all on like an honor system basically. And you'd think, oh, they get an easy ride. Why don't more people just commit crimes? Surely it's easy, but they actually don't. Like it does seem to be working there. So yeah, that would have benefited there, but certainly not in a British or American prison system.
Oh, God,
you're never coming out rehabilitated.
No, not at all. No.
For the most part.
No. No.
Anyway, they both only served 7 years of their sentences. They were both released in January of 2004, both aged 21.
She reoffended quite quickly.
She reoffended.
Fucking hell. She didn't waste any fucking time, did she?
No. She attacked someone. She was standing in a halfway house and she attacked another resident.
Yeah.
So she had to go back to prison and serve out the rest of her years, which was another 2 years.
Another 2 or 3 years, yeah.
Christopher, as far as anyone knows, never committed another crime.
I mean, that says a lot, doesn't it? That says a whole lot. She reoffends almost immediately after leaving prison and he's not heard of again.
Well, it's just the way she is.
That's it. She's the... He shouldn't have done, obviously, what he'd done. Like, no, you know, no matter how much someone convinces you or coerces you into doing something, like, you don't go around stabbing and ripping out people's intestines and stuff. So he's no way, shape or form in the right here. But she, like, is... like mentally a killer, like she's a sociopath.
Yeah,
like she's
she
probably gets off on the thrill of it. Blah blah blah. Like maybe not so much for him. Like he's got issues of a different kind, but she wants to do the act.
Yeah, because she was he was always introverted, wasn't he? Like we said earlier, like he was more. Quiet and the herb type as it was called. I love that herb.
The herb type.
Yeah.
I know.
But she did, looking at her pictures when it happened, she did look like she had a mean streak in her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Even though she had that face.
Yeah.
Same exact expression in every photograph. Yeah. Even the ones you look, modern photographs of her.
There was one in April this year. Yeah. Did you see it?
She's same look on her face.
Same.
Yeah. It's like she doesn't have emotions. Yeah. It does tie in with the sociopath.
Sociopath, yeah. Absolutely,
And like when she's arrested, like just when her hair, she was her head down, her hair was just all covered her back and she was just, she's just like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I'm unbothered. You're not getting anything from me.
Yeah.
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 She's really, really like such a disappointing person because she could have gone in an amazing direction. Her options for her life would have been limitless with the, obviously, it's not great that she was put up for adoption in the first place, but then she was so lucky to be adopted by the people she was adopted by.
Absolutely.
With, like, in terms of, like, money and stature and opportunities. Yeah. And this is what she chose to do. And not only that, you go to prison. All that's taken away from you. You go to prison, have a horrible time, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Come out, you'd like to think, you go, do you know what? I am actually really lucky. I'm going to toe the line.
Mm.
And then you fucking go and do it again. Well, like not the same thing, Velasquez. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's insane. I just wanted to know. And the annoying thing is,
she's probably still got access to the family money. Like, I doubt they disowned her because her father was at court every day. They both were.
I think the most recent photo of her in April, she was still in New York, I think.
Yeah.
I think she was still in New York.
Yeah. I just don't know how.
Ain't going to be cheap.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Not in this day and age, anyway.
Yeah. Especially, she probably hasn't got a job because he's going to employ her.
Mm. Well, yeah, she walks with a walking stick now from a car accident as well.
Oh dear.
Yeah, she has in the photo from that was taken in April this year, she's got a walking stick, which is from, I'm sure it said a car accident. It was a car accident from a number of years ago, basically.
No more rollerblading for her.
No, absolutely not. But she looks like her face is still the same.
She has got it. Is the nickname she's been given? She has got a baby face.
Yeah, she has. Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a mental case, and I've never even heard of it before.
I hadn't before this that show either.
There's not loads on it though. Like,
no, there isn't.
And I'm really surprised because it is a fascinating case, and they are, like, I mean, I know it's mostly focused on Daphne, but the pair of them done it, like, Chris is involved as well.
Yeah.
So it is, like, the pair of them are very fascinating, and it's like a two-person murder type thing, and there really wasn't very much on it.
No.
Apart from, like, that documentary on Netflix, there was very little I could find.
Yeah,
there wasn't online or podcast or anything.
Actually pretty good, to be honest with you, because I hate it when there's so much information. Because you start getting things conflicting against each other. And
I was just like, I think that's the thing. Sometimes there's
conflicting.
You have to go to the right source.
The opposite information.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, I'll just find that gang stuff. But then that wasn't featured in the documentary. And the documentary does obviously have a lot of people who were involved in the case. You'd like to think that that's a reliable source.
Yeah, absolutely.
That could have been complete bullshit. Or it might not have been, and there might have just been, it might have just been a footnote because the main focus was about Daphne. And I don't know if that's just because of her demeanour and her upbringing. Like, it's a lot more fascinating for the adopted rich girl to be the murderer.
I do wonder whether it was because she was a girl.
Yeah, it would have been made it more sensational. I think it was probably more for the fact that she was clearly the ringleader.
Yeah.
She was by far the dominant personality in that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So I think they figured, as you would, like, there's an small introverted guy who was bullied a lot, who just wanted to fit in.
Yeah.
And then when he found someone that he kind of took him on, he just did whatever she told him to do.
Whatever she told, yeah, because he didn't he, really?
And just the fact that he has never reoffended in any way, he's just living his life,
Speaks volumes, it really does. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really sad case.
It is a really sad case. You know, for all the issues that the victim had, no one deserves to, you know, die in such a way. Yeah. Like, a matter of circumstance as well. Like, you know, it was just kind of wrong place, wrong time kind of thing.
I mean, unfortunately, the entire prosecution team's basically the whole case was that he was a pervert and
disgusting
it ruined his family
because all his family were like Absolutely not. Yeah. I don't know why the media were trying to spin this to say that, you know, he made a move on Daphne and this, that and the other. And it was just gross.
I mean, there was absolutely nothing in his past or in his life to suggest that that would have been the case.
Drunk or not. Yeah, exactly.
And like, because he's, because even though obviously he did have issues with alcoholism and stuff, like he did have a support network. It wasn't like he wasn't liked. You know, a lot of people liked his company and liked him. He just had this unfortunate addiction. Because he's got a memorial bench, hasn't he, in the park that it happened. Was it? I don't know if it was like Strawberry Fields or it was. It was definitely near Strawberry Fields, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was right.
Yeah, because that's where it happened, wasn't it? Because they'd come from Strawberry Fields into like the main park area.
So was that one lady on that documentary was saying like she would take her kids to the Strawberry Fields to play when they were kids, and Daphne was one of the kids they would play.
She knew her, didn't she?
Yeah, she knew her. Yeah,
Because I think it said, I was really fascinated with what the plaque said though on the thing. Like apparently it says something like, "I tried to save you."
No, she wrote that.
She wrote that.
Well, she visited the grave.
She went back to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, and she wrote. She left a note.
She left a note.
No.
That was when she was released.
Yeah. It said, it did say something like, I tried to save you. Part of it was, I tried to save you.
Yeah.
It was really distasteful, to be
honest. So it said, rest easy, I tried to save you. I'm sorry I failed you. I'm sorry for the pain I caused you and your family.
Yeah. That she shouldn't know. That's
really
so
distasteful, that.
Yeah. That is honestly, that's like just rubbing the salt in the wound.
I mean,
she's just trying to reinforce her innocence.
Yeah.
Because I don't see how kicking someone and knocking them to the ground when someone's attacking them with a knife is saving them.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous. You can't save somebody by kicking them with your roller blade. Jesus.
No. Not unless they were on fire and you kicked them into some water.
Yeah.
And like you said, she was starting fights throughout the day anyway. Yeah. And then, and also like the comment about like that she wanted to kill someone that day or that night. And
actually really lucky because a very small 15-year-old girl running around trying to start fights with grown men. You've only got to run into the wrong man.
Oh,
yeah. It's going to end very badly for you.
Yeah.
That was the case of Daphne Abdallah, the babyface butcher. How have we been, guys? What have we been doing?
Watching Baby Reindeer, innit?
Oh my god, I'm so glad you mentioned that.
I'm so glad you watched it. When you put it in the chat, I was like, yes.
We literally binged it in one night.
Yeah, we did as well.
Did
Sunday.
Every episode in one night.
It's intense. You said, Paul, it does start off a bit like, oh,
it really tripped me up.
And then all of a sudden, it's darker and darker.
Because the vibe of that first episode is very light.
Yeah.
Like it's light and airy and it's a little narration comedy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wonder why they didn't get like a famous comedian to do this role. Rob Beckett would have been good in this role. Whoa, wait a minute.
just insane. Just absolutely insane. Like
it just gets darker and darker and darker as it's going along.
That woman who played Martha.
She's fabulous. She's fantastic.
She was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
She's
She's in Back, you know, the sitcom with Robert Webb and David Mitchell.
Yeah.
And also Pride.
She's growing.
Oh, it's great. Watch for the first time, Evan, right? It's really good.
I'll have to put that on my list. No, I've not seen Pride. Baby Reindeer, amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. I don't know whether I'd watch it again.
No, I wouldn't watch it again.
Because like the one episode was really heavy, like the one that came up with the warning and stuff. And
just spoilers. From four onwards. Fucking horrifically dark.
And
it just keeps hitting you out of left field with things, like things you just did not see coming.
Yeah, and like fair play to him because, you know, he acknowledges the fact that he was making bad decisions, and he was in such a self-destructive place that he literally couldn't do anything else. Yeah. Like, you know,
spoilers.
Spoilers. Towards the end, when she got his phone number and he's cataloging the fucking voicemail.
Oh, and listening to them, and putting them in playlists.
In his
way, he was kind of as fucked up as she.
Absolutely.
Because he gets himself into a good place. He has addictive personality, and he just gets sucked back into it. And also, like he admits, he was a part of him that feeds off the attention. It was so multi-layered, and that's what I really liked about it. It took accountability in all areas. There was no she's a bad person, I'm a good person, and worries me. It was really multi-layered. And the only person I think I felt really, truly sorry for was Tara.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Because you can't save someone that doesn't want to be saved.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I did feel really sorry for Terry. And they did seem to have such a good relationship. And he just couldn't get past that final stage. And it was inevitable that he was going to fuck that up. And I think he knew it. I did feel sorry for Terry.
But it's like, the only person I had no sympathy at any point for was the producer guy. Producer, whatever. But everyone else, like even Martha at some points, you could see how not well she is and where that possibly came from. And then and also him. And then there's certain points where I was like, you're a dickhead as well, mate. There was no point where I was like, throughout the whole thing, like, no, you poor person. It's like, you're an idiot. You shouldn't have done that. That makes you a bad person.
But then the monologue at the comedy show. And you kind of understand a little bit the way he's like, he's like he is. And it's so well done, that bit.
It really just nails it.
Have you seen the actual video when he did it?
No.
It's not the same, and there's a lot of footage around that's actually from his Edinburgh show. So it's his.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So he, off the back of this, he'd done two shows. One's like, it's got monkey, ape, something like that in the title. And then there's another
monkey
one.
Then there's
another one which was kind of. So this, so Baby Reindeer is an amalgamation of his two shows. A lot of the footage that people found being like, this is his breakdown. No, it wasn't. That's from the show.
I don't think he's actually a comedian, is he? IMDb, he's just listed as a writer.
No, he's a comedian.
He's a comedian. Like, he's Edinburgh, loads of things.
Fringe and everything. He's a comedian. So it's an amalgamation. So there are clips of his show prior to him doing the famous shows. And he's comedian with the prop comedy, it's still more well received than it was made out in the program.
Unless you're Carrot Top, just leave that alone.
I hate anything like that comedy. I think those are definitely some of the most awkward parts of that show were some of his comedy. I was just like, I can't watch other people.
But the funny thing was, while he was doing his his dumb prop stuff, no one was laughing. But when he was veering away from that and doing sort of observational stuff, people were laughing.
Yeah.
But he just never seemed to click that he should just do that.
I don't think he wanted to go in that direction because that is the basis for most. He was doing anti-comedy.
But yeah, no, it was. But yeah, a lot of the breakdown stuff was not him having a breakdown. People, it's clickbait, isn't it? People want the comments and stuff, and you look into it.
They want the original picture.
No, that's not his breakdown. Don't make it out. It is.
I didn't even realize it was based on real stuff.
Yeah.
When I watched it. Yeah. It was only afterwards.
He pretty much said it's pretty she's accurate, except for he's changed the people.
Morgan, apparently.
I'm not.
The real Martha. Her name's Fiona Harvey, and she's been on Piers Morgan this week.
Yeah, I'm not into
that. Two twats in the room.
Yeah. She's still obviously unwell. She probably does want to have her say, but she's not.
What's her name? Not
Fiona Harvey.
I know someone is always going to do it if she's offering it, but for Piers Morgan to have got it as well, I'm just like, you're a dick.
He's just a dick.
Mentally, he's
a parasite.
He really is.
He is a parasite. I can't stand him.
She's a mentally unwell person.
Abuse
is going to start a cycle again. And something that he was probably trying to put out there, maybe for closure, multiple reasons, but maybe to do some good as well.
Yeah.
This now doesn't feel like it's going to go down the good route, because they've found who the producer guy is as well, haven't they?
Who
speculated who it is. Yeah.
His name Harvey Weinstein.
I actually don't know who it is, to be fair. I didn't get that far. I didn't want to look into it too much.
I didn't, but I saw something the other day that Richard Osman had said in an interview, saying everybody knows who it
is. Everyone knows who it is, yeah.
In the industry.
That circuit you're going to, aren't you? Because he's going to have tried it with a lot of.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think that episode made me my stomach churn.
That was so shocking.
So much.
But you could, even before it got to the stage where it was actually happening, you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, but I didn't think it was actually going to happen. I thought it was going to be like, oh shit, I see what's going on here. I'm getting out.
No, I expected it.
The end bit, like, when it's kind of, he hasn't seen him for years and stuff, and then he turns up his door and you feel like maybe he's going to confront him, but that's not what happens. He just falls into that cycle again. It was a really honest account. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, because like his narration over the top, he's like, but I kept going back even though he knew it was wrong. And what might happen, I think his hunger to be famous and to make something of his comedic career at that point, it felt like he was like in a corner and the only way out was to go through with that. And that is a scary place to be in.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, under the influence or not, that's a scary place to be.
Yeah, it'd probably be less scary under the influence, to be fair.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
At least some part of it would be fun.
What a cocktail of fucking drugs as well.
MDMA
bomb and drinking GHB. Fucking mad.
Like I would never take any drug off. Well, these days I wouldn't take any drug anyway. But like if someone I barely knew was like, yeah, take this drug. There's no way I'm going, yeah, sure, give us it.
It's just insane. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, what people will do for the prospect of fame.
Well, that is crazy to me. Like, being famous is... I can't think of anything I'd least like.
Really?
To be famous? I would hate to be famous. Are you kidding me?
I don't think
it would be the worst thing in the world for me. I hate attention of any kind. I don't like talking to people. Like, I like to be invisible. As invisible as possible. Fame is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, I don't think
I'd mind it.
Oh, I would hate it. You can't go anywhere normally. Like, can you imagine, like, looking at your door just having photographers and shit?
That's the thing. I don't really go out anyway, but yeah, that's the only thing that would bother me is if I couldn't just go to like Morrison's or just to the shop to get.
But I mean, that's what fame is. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's
loss of privacy.
I suppose you pay people to do that for you when you're that famous. Just go and get me.
But that's not fun, is it? I like to.
No, exactly.
You know, exactly. Yeah. There's nothing I like more than wandering around like Tool Station or fucking B&Q or something.
Tool Station.
It's my favourite thing. Like, you can do things fun. Don't laugh. Have you ever been to Tool Station? It's a gold mine.
No, I can't say I've been to. I've been to a Wix. I've been to a Screwfix.
Screwfix is a great tool. Yeah,
I've been there.
Big fan.
Yeah, I was there last year getting a new door handle for the patio door when we were breaking into. Yeah, because we've got one just down the road. I don't like Wix. I don't know why.
I don't like Wix either. But the reason when I buy sheet materials,
it's just like, what? Why are we?
I'll go and get Nick, and I'll disappear.
Nick's the guy, isn't he?
He's building cupboards and desks at the moment for his game room.
Pictures, please.
What's
he using MDF?
I'll ask him, and I'll let you know.
Look at his face. He's like, Paul needs to know. He needs to know what he's doing.
He was doing it all last week.
I'm interested in what technique he uses to paint the edge grain of MDF.
Okay, I'll let you know. I don't know. It's very, I do find it, like, I don't understand it. I ask questions. I find it quite attractive to watch because it's like, oh, man doing man thing. But yeah. That's as far as my interest in it goes.
I could put you off that real quick. I swear a lot and fucking drop stuff.
I don't know. After being with so many useless people, it's so nice to watch someone and be able to do something, have a craft or like...
Yeah, yeah. I get that. That makes sense. Yeah.
You mean you're just happy that he ain't trying to be a fucking influencer? Because that's what everyone wants to do nowadays.
Yeah, just happy just doing... He's happy building stuff and gaming.
Yeah. What's... Simple things.
Well,
simple
things. Exactly.
I mean, I'm exactly the same, except it's building stuff and watching films.
Yeah.
Have we been watching anything else? Any recommendations?
Watch Tarot. It's terrible. I recommend you don't watch it.
I watched Argyle. Recommend you don't watch it.
Don't watch it. Don't fucking watch it.
Yeah, watched that. Yeah. It was one of them where I was like, we had nothing else to watch. And I was like, oh, go on then. Let's just give it a go. But I really like Sam Rockwell as well. So
I love Sam Rockwell.
So disappointing.
But even he couldn't save that film.
No, I just watched it and I looked at Nick and I went, I don't even have any words for what I've just watched.
It's on for so long.
I know. Oh. Yeah, we paused it and I thought I was kind of only 5 minutes to go. There was still like half an hour to go. Yeah, and I was
it
like,
it feels like so long.
How is this still going?
Really?
Yeah, unnecessary, so many unnecessary plots, twists.
Nothing in it is real. It's all CGI pretty much. Even the cat. There's a fucking cat and it's a CGI cat. You couldn't have just used a real cat.
Oh my God.
The end, there's a dance sequence bit at the end. I won't give away too in case anyone wants to watch it, but there's a dance sequence bit at the end and that is literally when I think I had actually lost the will to live when I was watching that. I was like, this is horrendous. Yeah. I was just like, this is, you know, when you're laughing at something out of like sheer, this is fucking ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, not because you're enjoying it. It was kind of like that.
I saw it at the cinema and I was angry.
Oh no.
Oh really?
I was so angry. Yeah. It just took my time away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one to watch. And yeah, and then we've started Ripley, which is the complete polar opposite that we've only watched, I think it might be two or three episodes. Okay. But so far, really liking it. Love Andrew Scott anyway.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Was unsure with it being black and white, but you kind of forget that it's black and white. You're not that bothered, it goes with it.
I like black and white.
It's really...
Yeah.
Makes me feel comfortable in a weird way.
Really? Oh no, I'm the opposite. Usually it makes me pay attention more, like I'm a bit on edge. But it's so far really, really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, you'll be pleased to know I've started Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Comfort show.
Warms my heart.
I have to skip. I rarely skip like intro credit, you know, like
the song is terrible. I always skip
absolutely terrible.
Yeah,
does Rory piss you off?
She's the worst character in that show.
She annoys the shit out of me.
I'm only about 5 or 6 episodes in.
That's
at
enough.
The moment.
That's enough.
My favourite is Michelle.
Michelle's
love him.
Great. I love
Luke. Just love how deadpan he is.
Yeah,
he's great. I love him. And obviously Luke's
my man.
Yeah.
I love Luke. And I do like Lorelai.
I love Lorelai.
I like Lorelai, yeah.
She's such a no bullshit kind of person.
Yeah, like. And she's so like, she's just like, this is me. You know, you got to take your fuck off kind of thing. And I like that. I do like her character.
She's like great mum vibes. She's just like,
yeah.
I absolutely love the town meetings.
Oh, they're so ridiculous.
I don't think I've seen a town meeting yet.
Oh, they're in it all the time later on. It's just like all the wacky characters of Stars Hollow just in a residence meeting. It's so funny.
I love that Lorelai's dad is Max from The Lost Boys. It's Max from The Lost Boys.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Amazing. Because when, like, they go to, like, her parents' house for the first time, I'm like, oh, my God, it's Max from The Last Boys.
Yeah.
But how grandfatherly is that guy? Although he's probably not warm to look Rory properly yet.
Well, no, a bit later been on, the golf. They've been on the golf thing.
Yeah, golf thing.
I love that episode. I really like that episode because she's like, because Lorelai was like, oh, we don't have to go on Friday now. And Rory's like, I actually want to go.
Yeah.
Like, really? Why do you want to go? I like that she bonded with her granddad over the golf. She sat there talking to his mates at the, because they had a lunch at the club and stuff. And like, Lorelai's like, what? You had lunch at the club? But yeah, it's quite good so far. It's a nice.
Oh, I love it.
It's just like, it's just like a comfort. Yeah. It's like a cup of tea kind of show. Really it's very comforting.
Yeah. It's a warm blanket of a television show.
Yeah. It's easy to watch. Like, it's just.
And the best thing about it is nothing horrible ever happens. It's just a very nice show.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm liking it so far, because we always end up watching, you know, like we're watching Supernatural still, you know.
Yeah.
And that's like the gore level.
I loved Supernatural up until the last two series, but I was like,
we're up to season eight. We just watched.
I've never got past seven.
You should.
It's not that I don't want to. It's just by the time I've got through seven seasons, I'm a bit bored with it. And I'm
it's great.
Give
me more. Yeah. And then I look and I think there's like 27 seasons of this show.
Yeah. Well, there's 15 seasons.
Yeah, it's too many.
So I just didn't enjoy it when Dean, as in Jensen Ackles Dean, not Gilmore Dean, when he starts having so many like issues like with the whole Michael thing, and you're like, oh, can we just get past this? Can we get, and then that just keeps happening and happening and happening. So
I was very upset about Bobby.
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that guy.
I loved Bobby.
Yeah. Really? I hate that guy. Yeah, I don't know why, I just don't like him.
Loved Bobby. I was very upset about Bobby.
But yeah,
it's funny. We just watched an episode tonight. And it's to do with this Japanese kid or Chinese kid. I can't remember what he is. Wow, he's like the key. I can't remember. I cannot remember. He's like, he's the only one that can translate the tablet.
Yeah.
He goes back home to his mum, right? And
Kevin. Is his name Kevin?
Kevin Tran. That's it. Kevin Tran. That's his name. He goes back home to his mum, and obviously his mum's like reported him missing, like he's never gone back because he went with the angels and this and the other. His mum opens the door and they're throwing like, you know, the borax on her to make sure she's not a demon and this and the other. And as soon as she started
talking, you got her, didn't you?
And, well, there you go. As soon as she started talking, I said to Sam, I was like, that's Julie from Friends, that is. And he's like, really? I went, I'll put in a tenner on that. Check it. That's Julie from Friends, who Ross went out with, the archaeologist who he met in China.
Yeah.
I was right. It's my superpower. I was right. It's Julie from Friends.
Do you do that thing where you when you're watching something and you recognise someone, but you try and guess it before you give up and look on IMDb?
I don't give up though, because I'll be like, but the thing was, Paul, you're going to be so disappointed now. There's one episode where there's a girl and she is basically drugging Sammy into thinking that they're a couple and they're getting married and this, that and the other. And the girl who was doing it, I was like, oh, my God, she is so familiar. And there was somebody else in the episode. I was like, oh, that's so-and-so from whatever. And Sam's like, yeah, you're right, looking it up on IMDb. Because I always test myself because I go, I think that's so-and-so. And Sam will look it up. And the girl bothered me throughout the whole episode. And it wasn't until the end I was like, I give up. I don't know who she is. I fucking looked it up. It's only fucking Emily Perkins from Ginger Snaps.
No way.
Oh.
One of my favourite horrors. And I didn't fucking recognise her.
Yeah, she's great, actually. She was brilliant.
And I just did her hair was blonde for a start.
I think I've seen that episode. Is that season seven or below.
I think it is season seven. Yeah, I think it is season seven. Yeah, but honestly, I was so annoyed at myself. I was like, "It's Emily Perkins. How did I not clock her? She's in Ginger Snaps, one of my favorite horrors. This is ridiculous.
Nightmare.
Yeah. So, next episode is my choice.
Yeah.
We're gonna do a relatively big one, but I don't think he's that famous, although like he's not that talked about as much as like Dahmer or Bundy or Gacy or whatever. So I've chosen Robert Hansen.
Oh, I know the name.
Yeah, me.
You'll know as soon as you see his photo, you'll know his you'll know him.
Oh yeah.
So what Robert Hansen?
Robert Hansen, Hansen. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as you see his picture, because he is very distinctive.
Yes, he is, yes. Yeah, oh, yes. So he's known as the Butcher Baker.
Weirdly, I only discovered this guy a matter of months ago. So if you, really? I put it in the group chat, if you remember.
Maybe that's where I know him from.
I've literally never heard of him until
I wonder if that's where I know him from.
I wonder if that triggered my memory then, and that's what made me look it up.
It was a while ago. It must have been a month, 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah, so we're going to do Robert Hansen.
Oh, fantastic.
Cool.
And on that note, listeners, always remember to delete your Google history.